Good morning, New Mexico. Welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company, streaming on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services, and we're at facebook.com/radiocafe. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to the folks from Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families. I'd like to welcome now Diana McWilliams. She is the director of the Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. And I'd like also to welcome from the same wonderful organization, Teresa Candelaria and Carol Horwitz. Welcome, ladies, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you so much, Mary Charlotte.
So we are here to talk about a town hall meeting that is happening this week on Thursday, the 22nd of April at 5:30 at the Rape Crisis Center, called Faces of PTSD, the Cost of Crisis. Let's talk about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. A lot of people have it.
They do. It's estimated anywhere between 3 to 8% of the population, general population, has it at any given time. And that may even be underestimated since a lot of times with the stigma of mental health, a lot of folks don't seek services or don't seek help. It is truly a burden on our communities across the country. We estimate that $42.3 billion are lost annually every year in the healthcare costs, as well as job productivity, work productivity, relationships, or really the degradation of relationships, whether it be through domestic partners, children, friends, that sort of thing. So it's very detrimental to our communities.
Some of the costs you can count in dollars, as you just did, and a lot of them are costs to the community that are, for example, when violence happens in a relationship, when a domestic violence situation comes out. We've certainly talked about this with returning war veterans.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We do know that about 50% of the people walking around with PTSD got it through some type of recurrence of violence, and folks that have experienced sexual assault, some type of sexual violence, and domestic violence are up there in the with that 50%. So 50% walking around have suffered some type of sexual violence or domestic violence. But then it goes from there. You also have folks that are stressed out from multiple stressors, health issues, the economy, maybe job loss, and also having to be a primary caregiver and having a lot of stress on themselves. Also veterans coming back from war. May have seen some very horrific things, experienced horrific things. And then also their family doesn't understand when they come back all the different support that they need around them. So their resiliency suffers.
I think that something that's really important for us to think about is the cost of crisis on the community as a whole. For example, just last weekend a young man killed another young man at a party.
I know.
And our community has sustained serious crises in the last year, from a pregnant woman being murdered by her estranged or by her boyfriend, and the sisters that were killed on Soria. I think every single time something like that happens, it has an impact on our community, and we all wince. But we need to come together. This is something we've talked about before. We need to come together to start healing on a large level, and also to take action to make sure that things like this stop happening.
Well, and Carol, you're absolutely right. I was actually just at a meeting earlier today talking about women and substance abuse and the effect of on them and their families. And bottom line is, the state just did cut substance abuse programs, but then we're looking at the DUI incidences. And bottom line is, obviously, there's a correlation, but the folks that are committing these DUIs, as well as abusing alcohol and drugs, are trying to cope with their stresses, their anxiety, their trauma from something that's happened in their life, and they're having physiological symptoms of that and nursing it with alcohol and drugs.
And they're self-medicating.
Absolutely are. And there's alternatives. There's healthy alternatives. There is a way to feel better, get better, and get some coping skills.
What are some of the physiological symptoms of traumatic stress?
immediately. So if you are feeling high stress and anxiety, such as not being able to sleep, having nightmares, not being able to concentrate, also being hyper aroused, so you're easily startled. Also then when you start dissociating from your things that usually bring you joy or bring you comfort in your life, and then you don't want to have to do have anything to do with them, those are all signs of major stress, anxiety, and potentially full-blown PTSD.
I don't think people realize that they even have PTSD.
Absolutely.
When you think about the violence that happens in the community, people get desensitized to it. I grew up in East L.A. It was a regular occurrence. You saw somebody get beat up and killed. You just got used to it. And that's what happens in our communities that have so much violence, because then you have the news media, you have TV shows, the media doesn't help to instill that in people. So when it happens in your neighborhood, it's like, oh, just another act of violence, and they don't even realize how they're being affected.
I think something that's also very difficult is that so many people are living economically close to the edge. So you've got a single mother who, no matter what happens to her, can't miss a day of work because that's food in her children's mouth, or whatever the situation is, that you don't, there's no slack, there's no buffer, there's no way to just either go somewhere else or just stay home or let somebody else take care of you.
With our clinical services, just over the last year, just calendar year, we've seen, we serve all, obviously, anyone feeling these symptoms, but we do have usually a higher level of very low-income folks that come through our doors. In the past calendar year, that we saw more folks that are considered low to moderate income, and I believe that those are the folks that are most affected, most negatively affected by the economic stresses of the day. They're the ones that probably had a job and a half to two jobs, were, you know, definitely having this balancing act of barely meeting the bills at home, and now all of a sudden they've lost both jobs or a job or whatever the case may be, and they just aren't able to make ends meet. And it's very stressful, and it's stressful on the whole family, children included.
I just had an interesting phone call from the Esperanza's advocate at district court, and she said, isn't there some kind of law or rule about, you know, if you miss work because of domestic violence, you're not going to get punished? And then she said, I have this woman in here, and if she misses another day of work, they're going to fine her $150, and, you know, all these crazy things that are going on with this woman's job. And it just so happens that there is a law that says that if someone needs to go in and get, like, an order for protection, or they have to go to district court, if they have to meet with an attorney, they, by law, are protected in their job from being terminated or punished.
So employees and employers probably don't even know that.
Yeah, I know. It needs to get out there better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It should go without saying, but doesn't necessarily go without saying, that women are walking around the streets with post-traumatic stress disorder just as much as men, war veterans, and so on.
There is a higher incidence. Women actually are more at risk for PTSD and even clinical depression, stress, and anxiety. And I think part of it is a cultural thing. We are expected to wear our capes out every day, and be superhuman at times and balance everything and come home, cook dinner, feed the dog, and make sure everybody's ready for the next day. I do think there's societal expectations of that. Even if you have a very supportive family environment and your husband or partner is very helpful. In my case, my husband does a heck of a lot more than I do around the house. He's a great guy. But bottom line is, I know that that's not the usual situation. And women literally are balancing way too much, more than they should, basically. And it's affecting them physically, mentally, and emotionally. We see that military folks are trained to see violence and are trained to see combat and violent situations and are trained on how to handle that. It doesn't mean to say that they can cover every scenario and they're going to be, so combat ready and feel comfortable with every situation, obviously. However, in our daily lives, we're not expecting to be sexually assaulted. We're not expecting to be punched, you know, by an intimate partner. And so when it happens, it's shocking. And then when it happens on a recurring basis, it's just, it's a direct blow to the self-esteem. And that's where you start getting the stress and anxiety and panic disorders, as well as full-blown PTSD at some point. But I do think our military folks are obviously very well trained. We spend a lot of money every year doing that, and they're warriors. They're wonderful folks that defend our country. However, they may come back and still have that adrenaline pumping, saying, "I handled all that stuff, but now I've got to get back into regular life," and my family doesn't realize that. But I had the ability to cope in that horrific situation in battle, and now I'm home and I'm okay. And if their family understands that, and there's psychoeducation around that, there's more resiliency for that military person. But for the average person that sees, hears, feels, experiences violence, they're not expecting it and aren't equipped to handle it.
Well, another thing is that, I don't know why this is, but women tend to take a lot of things on that aren't their fault, as if they were.
Sure. And again, Mary Charlotte, I absolutely think that that's a cultural thing. That's a societal thing. It is a gender difference where it's, you asked for that. You were, you know, dressed suggestively. You are the object of desire. So you were asking for it. How can you blame a guy for wanting to, force himself on you when you were there looking all pretty? And that's just not the way I was brought up, and not what we're teaching our children now. But some folks still have that in their heads, that that's okay.
We're talking to the folks from the Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. I think another thing that you just said that's very important is that you can experience major trauma from witnessing something, even if it didn't happen directly to you.
Sure. I want to have Teresa speak to some of this in just a second. But, we have our Family Advocacy Center interviews children with a multidisciplinary team. We certainly work with the police officers, the DA, and also the SANE nurses. But Teresa is our lead forensic interviewer that actually interviews children that have been abused physically, sexually, or even witnessed violence. And especially when they're witnessing this on a regular basis, and even if it's a sibling or someone they love, it's extremely traumatic. But Teresa is the expert on that.
Well, and actually when the children come in, it's the children are actually not as traumatized as their parents. The parents are the ones that usually need treatment before the children. And what happens with them is, and it's usually a mother who is traumatized because her child told her that somebody was touching them. And what she does is that post-traumatic stress. It happened to her when she was young. She never dealt with it. And it's in her face again. So the trigger's there.
Do you see a lot of that when you are interviewing children and families, that something happened to the mother and then happens to her children?
The majority of times.
What's going on with that? What's that about?
Well, you know, if you come from when I was growing up, we didn't have the systems that we have now. We didn't have the services that are available in our community when we were growing up. And it was a dirty little secret. You didn't talk about it because the majority of the time it's a relative. So then you have to deal with your family reaction to a relative touching your child. Or maybe it's your husband or your father.
And when you say touching, you mean molesting.
Molesting, totally.
80% of sexual abuse or sexual assaults are from someone that the victim knows. So it's very low. Well, I shouldn't say very low because 20% is still too high. But the incidences are that you usually know the person, unfortunately.
Carol, when we were talking on the phone recently, you said that there are some communities that are dealing with and really taking into their hands, for example, drunken violence or drunk driving,
right,
things like that.
Right,
how
right.
do they do it?
Yeah, that's such a good question. What we have here in Santa Fe is a coordinated community response council, and it takes a change in community norms and in community acceptance. And everybody, it's like what we were talking about up in Farmington, where they've really reduced the number of drunken driving incidents. And it's because law enforcement, DEA, everybody has gotten together to say, no, we're not putting up with this anymore. And And I'm sorry to say this, and I know people are probably going to throw rocks at the radio when they hear, this, but we are being held hostage by the alcohol lobby in this state, and it's inexcusable that we should really be taxing alcohol to the level that would provide the kinds of services that the problems with alcohol bring on. And so that is going to take the entire community coming together and saying no more. And that can be with substance abuse, it can be with alcohol, it can be with domestic violence, any kind of violence. Because we have, not this year, but the year before, we had some really young gang members who killed each other. And We just have to dig in. We have to take responsibility for things that we see. Esperanza has a good bystander program for if you witness domestic violence, you should call. We have to take responsibility for each other, and we have to, when we see things that are unacceptable, we have to say, stop. That's not okay. That's not okay with me.
And that's where people are afraid. They're afraid to step in and say, that's not okay. Mm-hmm. You're in my environment. You're in my community, and I don't want that violence.
And it's very tricky because, I mean, when Santa Fe was truly a small town and perhaps a bit more homogenous than it is now, everybody knew their neighbors. It's such a different place now. Or if we're in a bigger city like Albuquerque or an even bigger city than that, how do you say no to somebody who may be your neighbor, but you don't really have bonds of friendship and trust with them?
Well, saying no in terms of, just I see what you're doing, that's not okay,
yeah,
kind of thing. Absolutely. I think what Carol was saying with the bystander programs, that all of us, the Coalition for Against Domestic Violence, as well as the Coalition for Sexual Assault Programs, we are all looking at our education prevention programs, which again is Teresa's specialty, to really look at bystander intervention. And that can just be easy enough where it's, okay, I'm standing in a store, someone's screaming at the cashier, and instead of coming up and saying, you're being a jerk, go away, it's I'm standing there until he goes away, and then I go over to the cashier and say, I saw everything. I don't want you to feel like that was your fault. I don't want you to feel unempowered that way. If you need to call or write this up, I'd be happy to do it. Here's my name and number. Call me. So it's giving that person a sense of control and a sense of, wow, there's that was wrong, and I don't have to accept it, and there's something that I can do about it. And that's something very simple that any of us can do.
Very little simple things. They're almost like random acts of kindness. See a mother in the store. She has three children. She's screaming at them. She's trying to get her shopping done, obviously just coming from work. Are you going to let her keep screaming at those kids in that way? Or can you say, you look like you're having a lot of trouble. Is there something I can do to help you? And that stops.
Have you ever done that?
Yes.
And what happened?
Yes. Thank you. I could use some help. And it stops.
Yeah.
And just that little, for that instant, it stops. But it's also like you're programming that people, you're not alone.
Yeah.
There are people that can help.
And law, I know that people are very hesitant about calling law enforcement, but that's what 911 is for. And people, every child should know how to dial 911. Because even if they can barely talk, all they have to do is have the phone off the hook and dial 911. And they can take it from there at dispatch. So we need to use that. And law enforcement, they may be grumbly about it when they hear me say it, but they do want people to call 911. They want those things to be reported. We just have to step up to the plate and say no more.
Mary Charlotte, I just wanted to address something that Carol said earlier about alcohol. The statistics that actually Carol keeps, and if you don't mind me talking about it, Carol, because I always find the data fascinating, the 911 calls that come in to Santa Fe County regarding sexual assault, domestic violence, a lot of them obviously are associated, alcohol is associated with them. So to me, alcohol is so acceptable in our society, yet it's so behavior altering and mind altering that and also very conducive to violence. And so when we're like, oh, well, yeah, you had a few drinks, just go sleep it off, those few drinks are definitely how that person is coping with their stress, and that extra drink is going to eventually at some point result in some type of negative behavior. So that's why PTSD treatment and getting access to services is so important before it becomes a problem.
Yet another reason to legalize marijuana, which is not associated with violence.
No, and even children who come in to disclose the intimate details of what happened to them, when asked, was this person drinking? You're going to get drinking and drugs. The children can tell you where to find it, and they can tell you what kind of brand that person was drinking.
Now, we're talking about calling 911. Police are yet another group of people who experience both firsthand PTSD and witnessing it, not to mention they can be a little bit rough themselves on people who are supposedly being served by them.
Right, and law enforcement is really aware of that, and I have to say, you know, I want to step up and say that Santa Fe Police Department is partnering with Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center to make sure that law enforcement officers who are experiencing PTSD have access to the kinds of resources. And actually, the access is there and has been there all along, but what has to happen is a mind change where law enforcement officers themselves recognize, or their peers recognize, that they need help, they need counseling, or
and that there's not a stigma around it, and it's not, right, a sign of weakness.
It's not a sign of, yeah, absolutely.
Well, and I would like to stress something positive about the police department.
Oh,
there's two things that they're doing. One is a peer support group, as Carol was just alluding to, but formally being set up where they can help in a situation, in a crisis situation afterwards, with debriefing, that sort of thing. That's number one. Number two is, I'm going to brag a little bit about one of my therapists. Kate Latimer just got shift certification through the New Mexico Attorney General's office. They helped with this, but it's because Kate's been working with first responders a lot, providing a lot of stress management workshops and ways to recognize severe stress and PTSD. So Kate went to a National Child Abuse conference and got SHIFT certified, which is Supporting Heroes in Mental Health Foundations and Training, which she is the only certified person in New Mexico and I believe even Arizona and Colorado. It is right now specific to the internet crimes against children. So our Santa Fe PD actually has an internet crimes against children unit now, and those folks are doing just some really horrifically traumatic work. They're looking at these images day in and day out, and Kate's training really taught not only the folks that are looking at these images what to do for self-care and not burnout, but also there's some management from policies from the, you know, a department's perspective where they can implement things to make it easier for those officers to handle that stress. So looking up from a monitor and being able to see another screen that's showing like a comedy, you know, show, or, you know, like a sitcom or some beautiful pictures or something like that, as well as making sure that they're not looking at pictures at least 2 hours before they go home, so they're not bringing that directly home to their family. Mm-hmm. Also, where they're not looking at it for more than 2 hours at a time, take a break, go have lunch, get outside, do whatever you need to do, walk, you know, run around the building a couple of times. But bottom line is, we should not be subjecting folks, most of our first responders, because they have to be ready for the trauma that's happening in the community. We have to make sure that they're taken care of,
right?
So they take care of us.
Scary, scary job to do.
It is.
I can't even imagine being a police person and going on my first day on the job.
Right, right.
I was at a police training about a year or two ago that showed a statistic that officers killed in the line of duty is usually in response to a domestic violence call.
Oh my goodness.
Their life is in danger, and I don't think the community realizes that.
It is.
Yeah. You know, I'm from the 60s. I never thought I would hug so many cops in my life. But I have met some really fine people that are law enforcement officers in all the branches that we work with, because we have a great working relationship with all of the law enforcement agencies in this community.
So we are here in Santa Fe talking to the folks from the Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. How are we doing in terms of, I mean, the last time we talked, the rate of rape in Santa Fe, northern New Mexico, was very high, even compared to the rest of the country, which I just find shocking.
New Mexico is number two in sexual assault in the country.
In the country.
Unfortunately. Alaska's number one. And we were talking about this the other day, that part of it is there's lots of places to hide. You know, we have a lot of frontier space here, but it doesn't matter.
And even more in Alaska.
Yeah, exactly. But bottom line is, it doesn't matter. You have to have a culture of not accepting sexual violence in your community. And Carol actually, you know, does compile the statistics from the 911 calls. And we are seeing that it's about level in terms of the domestic and sexual violence 911 calls. But bottom line is, we're still getting close to 1,500 calls, you know, a year. And that's a lot for a small community.
I just want to respond to that that breath, we're second in the nation, you know, as a scary thing. It could be a really good thing. It just means that we're getting so much education out into the community that people realize that there's help for this.
That's a good point.
That you can get
so
help.
It's actually being reported perhaps at a higher rate here than in other places.
Absolutely, because the services are there for people where they weren't before. And so that number goes up. Yeah, reported rapes. Oh, yeah, it's going up. And we go, oh, my God, that's so many. But it's that many people that are willing to report and get help.
Well, and actually, to Teresa's point just now, which hopefully, you know, we haven't been collecting, I think, the data in that way for long enough is my point. But 27% increase in bystander reports. So just from between 2008 to 2009, which is good, which that is a good thing. The other thing that always strikes me, though, is, it is about 80-20 in terms of female victims versus male victims of domestic violence and sexual assault. But the upsetting thing is that there's usually so many child witnesses. Last year, almost 800 of those incidents were witnessed by children. And it's just hugely upsetting because, you know, again, it's just passing the violence on to the next generation.
To the next generation, mm-hmm. Yeah. So... before we go, let's talk about this town hall that's going to be happening Thursday, April 22nd at 5:30 at the Santa Fe Rape Crisis Center.
Well, we're really excited about it. And again, this is definitely a joint effort, or not joint, but, you know, collaborative effort, because it's not just two organizations. It is the Coordinated Community Response Council, City of Santa Fe, with Carol heading that up. And then also Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families, and then ourselves, Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. The Mayor Cross, is going to be there. We have invited Secretary of Veteran Services, John Garcia, and it will either be Secretary Garcia or a designee. So we are going to have veterans represented. Pam Weissman from the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence, Luis Carlos, who is the sergeant with the Santa Fe Police Department for the Crimes Against Children Unit, and myself, and then Rich Ransley, our clinical manager. We're going to be on a panel, and we're going to be answering questions and talking about our experiences with helping folks with PTSD. And let's lower the rate of PTSD. I'd rather it be, you know, from instead of 3 to 8%, let's bring it down below 3%. I'd love it.
And like clinical supervisor said, you don't have to live with PTSD.
Yep.
Right. And the thing is that a lot of these things, they are secrets. And it's kind of like what Teresa was saying earlier. When things are kept secret, they always come out somehow eventually. So what we want to do is have
in a good way or a bad way.
Yeah. Right. Yes, absolutely. Well, I was thinking about the bad way. But so they can come out in a good way. And this town hall...
And by getting help in therapy and stuff.
Right, absolutely. So this town hall provides an opportunity for it to come out in a good way and for us to have those hard conversations.
So people can, if they have something that they've never told anybody, they can go to this town hall?
They can go to the town hall. We wouldn't ask them to disclose in a town hall situation, but, you know, there'll be a lot of people there who will be who are advocates who can help. So they'll be able...
Yeah, there will be. The one other thing I wanted to say really quickly that we're going to address in the town hall is that PTSD is treatable by very very easy therapies. It's cognitive behavioral therapies, things that actually are more common sense than you would think. So like breathing and teaching yourself that I do have some control over things. But because it's a physiological, there's physiological outcomes of PTSD, we do talk about more of a mind-body connection, and therapy helps develop that. We only do evidence-based therapies at our center. There's different ways that people can feel connected to themselves again that certainly we encourage through faith or through their own cultural practices. But bottom line is, you can work on it. It is treatable. Sometimes you will have recurrences of it, be triggered. I think Teresa was talking about triggering earlier, by a sight, by a smell, by a sound. Believe it or not, it can trigger you. But there's ways to cope with it and deal with it and feel better. And that's, everyone deserves to feel better.
And certainly if you have some listeners that feel traumatized by this conversation or they want to talk to somebody about what has happened to them, they're welcome to call our hotline, our advocacy line, which is 986-9111.
986-9111. And then the regular number for the Rape Crisis Center is 988-1951. You can also find them on the web at sfrcc.org.
In terms of the town hall meeting, I just want to thank you, Mary Charlotte, for agreeing to moderate for us. We're so excited to have you. You bring, you know, a broad breath of experience and knowledge to this. And so your expertise will really be greatly appreciated at the town hall meeting. It's our moderator.
Diana McWilliams is the executive director of the Santa Fe Rape Crisis and Trauma Treatment Center. And we've also been talking to Teresa Candelaria and Carol Horwitz from that organization, and we will see you at the town meeting on Thursday, the 22nd of April, at 5:30 in the afternoon. Thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
I'm very happy now to welcome Jody Rogers and Carrie Sullivan. They are with Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte. Great being here.
Thanks for having us.
So this coming weekend is an event called BASTA, Walk a Mile in My Shoes. It's all about National Crime Victims' Rights Week. Tell us about crime victims' rights. What are their rights? What do you mean by that?
Well, there are several rights that are allowed by law for crime victims, and they weren't always there. So part of the purpose of National Crime Victims' Rights Week is to bring public awareness to the fact that not only do crime victims have rights, but that this is not something to take for granted. And those rights include, for instance, being informed when a convicted offender who has harmed them is incarcerated or is moved either by escape or release. They include actual financial reparations, sometimes up to $50,000 for a permanent physical disability. They include access to crisis interventions such as hotlines that Esperanza and other agencies have all around the country, emergency shelter, legal advocacy, the list goes on. And all of these things weren't necessarily possible before the passage of the Victims of Crime Act in 1984.
So that was in 1984, and is that a national thing? It covers everybody in the country?
Yes, it's federal. And it's a pretty cool law, the Victims of Crime Act, because when it comes to crime victims' reparations, they made sure that all the funding, which has been upwards of $9 billion since 1984, that all the funding has come not from taxpayer dollars, but from criminal penalties and fines paid by offenders to the 93 U.S. attorney districts throughout the country.
Very interesting. So when somebody commits a crime, they have to pay, they have to go to jail and pay a fine.
That's right.
Right, and it's done on a federal level, so it's federal offenders of crime that that pay the fines that go into this pool of money that is then spread around the country through agencies and crime victims reparation commissions, you know, state level. And so the nice thing is, in some respect, although the federal government is having funding issues, crime is continuing to happen. So the funding for crime victims reparations is not going down. In some respect, it would be nice if it did, because then that would be having less crime. But nevertheless, it's nice that it's not made up of tax dollars, so it's not based on federal spending. It's based on crime.
So what kind of crimes are we seeing in Santa Fe, and particularly what you see at Esperanza?
Well, at Esperanza, we've definitely seen a huge increase in requests for our services, both residential and non-residential, as well as hotline calls. And the thing to really remember about this that we always try to emphasize in recent history is that although the recession has magnified the issues around domestic violence, such as the unemployment rate, meaning that offenders may be home more with their families, such as the fact that families, victims, and their children may not have the money to go elsewhere besides the shelter, it may magnify existing problems, but it doesn't cause it.
Right.
Nonetheless, we have seen an increase for our services.
Since the beginning of the recession.
Since the beginning of the recession. We are full at times of year when we're typically not full. Sometimes the winter before last, we were booked solid for months, I believe. The thing that's also interesting, I find, is that for our Crime Victims Reparation Commission here in New Mexico, going back to what Carrie was saying earlier, last fiscal year alone, $2 million was paid in victim reparations.
And so, for example, for somebody who is the victim of domestic violence, what kind of reparations do they get?
Well, I'm just looking on their materials in general. It says that it can be up to $20,000 per person, and that can go for medical and dental care, funeral and burial expenses, mental health counseling, loss of earnings. And then, as I said earlier, with a permanent physical disability, it can be up to $50,000. And we can certainly see any of these consequences coming from domestic violence, and we do see that with people in shelter.
The list you gave really points to what some of the special needs are of crime victims. I mean, if they've been hit, they literally need medical and dental care. If they've lost somebody in their family or somebody in their family has become disabled, they can't make ends meet in terms of bill paying.
Exactly. I think Carrie has a couple of interesting anecdotes we were just speaking about earlier regarding that.
Right. A friend of mine from another state was a victim of a brutal rape. And prior to that rape, she was a healthy woman, no physical conditions, and it was the most stereotypical, the most fearful rape that can happen. A man broke into her house in the middle of the night, woke her up in bed.
A stranger.
And after the rape, she developed chronic breathing conditions, chronic bronchitis, and to this day still has that. And so that's, you know, she certainly is someone who would have been eligible for crime victims reparations to pay for her medical conditions. If she went through lapses of not having medical insurance, or for some reason her medical insurance wouldn't pay for the treatment, then she could use reparation money to pay for that.
And of course, post-traumatic stress has to be part of a lot of people's lives.
That's exactly right. And it's part of the reason for our BASTA event. Part of the way to empower folks post-trauma, whether that's the people who were actually survivors of the crime themselves or their loved ones and the community in general, is to have something like a community-wide commemorative event and celebration of survival, of the rights that are here by law, and to give people a chance to empower themselves to come together and break the stigma of being a crime victim.
Is there a great stigma to being a crime victim?
I think the word victim itself still gives people sort of this sense of fingernails raking against the chalkboard, depending on what circles you run in. And it's certainly fallen out of favor.
In favor of survivor.
That's correct. And I'm hesitant to even use the word survivor exclusively because some people have died. Look at Matthew Shepard.
Yeah.
I mean, if people want to come to our walk and walk in honor of a hate crime victim who has died like Matthew Shepard, they can do that as much as they can walk for a friend or family member who has survived.
I think another way that victims are stigmatized, and in the case of this person I knew, I mean, I couldn't think of one possible reason that she would have, quote, unquote, been asking for it or would have been to blame, would have caused this crime to be perpetrated against her. However, that happens all the time. Domestic violence victims are, you know, asking for it, or they should have not burnt dinner, and that's why they got beaten, or whatever it might be. And so we're trying to show the community that a victim of a violent crime or a victim of any crime didn't cause the crime. No matter what they were doing, they didn't ask for it. They didn't cause the crime to be perpetrated against them.
This is something we've been dealing with for a really long time. I mean, we're perhaps a little bit away from the idea that if you were wearing a short skirt while walking down the street, you deserve whatever you get. But we're not far enough away from that, I suppose.
And part of that is the lack of accountability that that many institutions and individuals in communities across the country hold for offenders. A lot of the times there's a lot of enabling that goes on in second chances and softer sentences. There's a lot of shaming of victims that can go on, even within close families and friends, where it can be, you know, give him another chance, or what did you do to make him mad? So it's this combination of victim blaming and lack of accountability for offenders. And that is one of the beauty of National Crime Victims Rights Week and the Victims of Crime Act.
We're talking to the folks from Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families. So let's talk for a moment about the event this week. That is this coming Saturday, the 24th of April, Basta, which for those of us who do not have Spanish or Italian heritage means stop right now. What is actually going to happen?
The event is got two components. The first component is a march from the Roundhouse to Warehouse 21. The march begins at 12:30. We're asking folks to get there at noon. And we're asking folks to come and decorate a pair of shoes. So come with your shoes decorated to march in honor of a victim or survivor of crime.
Whether it be yourself or somebody else.
Exactly. And then at that point, we'll march to Warehouse. And once we get to Warehouse, there'll be a big festival with speakers, music, food. It's all free. It's open to anyone, regardless of age, regardless if they are a victim of crime or not. We just want it to be a community awareness event.
And so you will have some very beautifully decorated and painted and beaded shoes, no doubt.
Yeah, we're also going to have a contest for most outrageous shoes, as well as most touching and most original, etc. And we're going to give out gift certificates to places like On Your Feet and Starbucks, etc. So we have a really fun component of the shoe contest as well.
When you have people who are victims of crime, and it's not domestic violence, where obviously you know the person, you live with that person or whatever, but the person who victimized you is a stranger, have you seen situations where the person, the victim meets their victimizer?
That's not a situation at Esperanza that we deal with, because we deal exclusively with domestic and dating abuse and stalking from
right.
Someone that's known. As a therapist, I have worked with people who have been victimized by both strangers and by people that they know. And it really depends on the person. I have known people who have decided to go to the courtroom and face people, and I have known people who have decided not to do that. And sometimes it's not just the problem with facing the offender themselves, but it might be the defense attorney that might be intimidating, or just bringing up the past, or being asked to testify, or you know, being around law enforcement, whatever it is that sort of brings on that trauma.
I was thinking about it because in preparing to talk to the two of you, I was reading some of the websites about crime victims, and some of them actually get involved in programs of restitution, and that's very interesting but also tricky business.
That's right. It can be, and I think that most people in the domestic violence field are sort of leery of that, and probably recommend more than anything that people are working really closely with a domestic violence specialist or a mental health specialist of some kind to work with it on a case-by-case basis, because there is a really high risk of some re-traumatization by both being around the offender and by being back in the system.
So at Esperanza, it's mostly, I mean, it's called Shelter for Battered Families. It's mostly women, a lot of children as well.
It is. Our shelter sees 98% women and children, 2% men annually, because men are and can be victims of domestic violence. We also have an offender program, and that is predominantly the statistics swap. It's predominantly men with a few female offenders.
We are one of the few shelters in the country that is open to men residentially as victim survivors. And I'm very proud to say that, because there are times when families have to make the very hard choice of, you know, either splitting up so that adolescent male teenager goes somewhere else, or the rest of the family goes to the shelter. And we don't put people in that position, as well as both straight and gay men who experience intimate partner violence.
As well as we're one of the only shelters in the country who allow or have services for transgendered folks as well.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Do you Have there been a number of those cases?
I don't know. I know that there was enough of a demand to open the shelter. I think it's pretty rare, but we just want to make sure folks from all walks of life are able to come in for services, regardless of their background.
I think one of the media images of crime victims, at least, I mean, I tend to watch crime shows from time to time on television, and they all want revenge. And I think there's a real difference between what's happening in those kinds of media images and what's happening in reality. What do you guys see on the ground?
I see, again, as a therapist working in a variety of different settings, I do see people maybe having those feelings, but most people don't seem to want to act out on that. First of all, most people don't want to put themselves in the position of doing something against the law for revenge, because who's going to be the first suspect but somebody who might have been victimized by that person? And also, I think most people don't want to do to somebody else what was done to them. There is a tendency for compassion with humans, especially if they get the help that they need.
New Mexico often comes out pretty badly in rankings on things like, as we've heard from the Rape Crisis Center too, domestic violence and rape and so on.
New Mexico has been rated the second most dangerous state in the country for a few years in a row now. And that,
dangerous in terms of?
In terms of murder, rape, burglary, robbery, motor vehicle theft.
Good heavens.
And assault. Yeah, and assault. And we're also pretty high up there when it comes to domestic violence and assault by a known assailant. And so we actually are, it's really important that we're having this event as a community to come together and say basta, to say enough, and to also acknowledge all the great services that we do have. We have, last fiscal year alone, almost $2 million in victims reparations coming out of our New Mexico Crime Victims Reparations Office.
I bet a lot of people don't even know about this.
They don't even know it, and that's part of the reason for the event. We have a DWI drunk driving hotline if you're driving down the street and you dial *394 on your cell phone. We have an Esperanza domestic violence hotline, a rape crisis center, sexual assault hotline.
You know. *394, I could have used that a few times.
That's mm-hmm. right.
I actually have used it a few times.
Yeah, crazy people weaving around mm-hmm. in Cerritos Road. And so just quickly, what are some of the other services that people should know about that Esperanza offers?
We have a legal advocacy program. So folks that aren't clients of Esperanza, if you are or are not, and you're trying to seek an order for protection against your stalker or batterer, you can go to the First Judicial Courthouse downtown. And we have an advocate that will help you fill out paperwork and support you in court. They can't give you legal advice, but they can support you through the process.
Which is funded by VOCA, by the way.
Exactly.
VOCA being?
Victims of Crime Act.
All right. So once again, the event this weekend, Saturday the 24th of April, is BASTA, Walk a Mile in My Shoes. And just for people who are just tuning in, tell us about the details once again.
It's a march and festival. The march will begin at the Roundhouse at 12. We'll begin marching at 12:30. We're asking folks to decorate a pair of shoes in honor of a crime victim, living or past. If you don't want to decorate your shoes, still come out. We'll have little name badges that people can write who they're marching for. We're going to have a contest around that. And then once we get to Warehouse 21, we'll have a big festival with music. The mayor's going to come out and kick off the event. Speakers, free food.
Girl Scout cookies.
The whole event is free. And it is Earth Day. Right. So we're hoping that if people are out celebrating Earth Day, even if they just want to drop in, if you miss the march, still come for the festival. You can bring your pets to march.
Excellent.
So we just want the community to come out and hopefully learn something and stand up to crime.
Jody Rogers and Carrie Sullivan are with Esperanza Shelter for Battered Families. They're at esperanzashelter.org. The hotline is 505-473-5200. Thanks both for being here.
Thank you.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at ksfr.org, podcasting at santafe.radiocafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at facebook.com/radiocafe. And my email address is radiocafe@ksfr.org. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz presents the monthly New Orleans Hour. broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company. We'll see you tomorrow. And tomorrow is the one-day fun drive on KSFR. And tomorrow morning during the Radio Cafe and perhaps a little beyond our normal hours, we will be talking about dogs and cats and trying to determine which is better. See you then.